to the Extra Magic Hour, a Disney Parks podcast. Here are your hosts, Anne Ravanos and Dimitri Ravanos.
Welcome to another edition of the Extra Magic Hour. I am Dimitri.
And I'm Kat.
We have finally, for the first time in a while, no pre-show prologue or explanation of things that did or did not go wrong or right. We can just launch in and have a regular show. So, Kat, what is happening in the news?
There's not a lot of news this week, but there are a lot of rumors, so we're going to go all over those ones, too. First, we'll start with the news stories. So, everyone remembers Push the Talking Trash Can, and everybody was so devastated when Push left. But don't worry, Tomorrowland has a new robot that will talk to you. His name is called I Can, the Talking Robot, and he moves around Tomorrowland, and he has a comprehensive understanding of his surroundings. It can look up information for guests, and he can even interact with guests individually, like knowing where they live. It says that he has a video screen on his chest. Don't really know what it's for, but I'm sure for fun stuff, and has a sound system for music and sound effects.
Huh. So this is not just Push rebranded. Like, this is a brand new robot that they're rolling out.
Yes.
And, okay. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, he doesn't really have official appearance times, but they say he's around mostly in the morning.
Okay. I do like the idea that he will be able to answer guest questions and interact with them one-on-one, only because I like the mental image of someone getting fed up trying to find a cast member and going directly to a robot to get their questions answered.
Yes. Being like, where is this?
Yeah, right. So we'll get into this at the back end of the show, but clearly this is a next step in the Extra Magic Band evolution in terms of being able to interact with the guests based on where they're from, because obviously a lot of it's going to have to do with the information stored in your Magic Band.
Right. And I think that's kind of like what they want to do with the characters, because didn't Talking Mickey used to be able to be like, hello, Katarina?
So I've never seen Talking Mickey, so I don't know for sure, but I do know that at one point there was a plan that the princesses were going to have the ability to access that information so you could have a more one-on-one kind of interaction with the princesses.
I would love that, but just having a, for me personally, I know I have a name that is hard to, when people like glance at it, it's
right.
Hard to pronounce. Cause like if the princesses have like an earpiece or something where, and they're told the wrong name, that would just be devastating.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk more about this, at the back end of the show. This type of use of the Magic Band, we found out last week, is going to play a huge role in the Star Wars experience. So we'll talk about that more at the back end of the show. But for now, what else is in the news?
So two videos have come out showing the Navi River Journey at in Pandora, and just showing the queue for the Flight of Passage. And so apparently there is a, the media event, last week. And so the Orlando Sentinel came out with this article, and I watched the Navi River Journey video, and I was not blown away.
Really?
Did you see it?
No, I've not seen it. Let me sort of amend that. I have seen it on my Facebook feed and didn't dedicate the time to watching it, so I've seen it like without the sound going through.
Yeah.
A little bit here and there. I will say one of the things that struck me is this is how the way this video is filmed is the way that the Imagineers have wanted the shaman animatronic filmed from the get-go, because I say it's way more impressive as you're further back from it. It to me did not look, and maybe if you see it live it's different, but to me what I've seen, it does not look like the most advanced animatronic ever made.
Oh, really? I thought the animatronic was great. I think that was the only part that I was like, well, that's pretty cool, but I was just still not impressed with the whole journey, like the journey as a whole. Like, I didn't feel like I was immersed in Pandora, because I finally watched the movie a couple weeks ago, and I wasn't blown away by the movie in general. But reading this article, it, like, made me really excited about Pandora. And I was like, maybe I just need to give it a, like, just when I go to Pandora, just, like, give that ride a chance. Like, not just go in thinking, oh, this video sucked.
I think just sort of what I've heard and read said about Pandora, I'm almost getting the impression that the rides should be an afterthought. That really what is amazing about this land is going to be the bioluminescent forest at night and the surroundings more than the two individual rides.
You know, you're right. You are exactly right on there, because on the article it says that Joe Rohde said that if you're only going in Pandora to ride the two rides, you are making a mistake. He says that you're wasting your time just doing the rides.
Yeah,
because
Jim,
that's not I was going to say, because that's not what Pandora is about. It's about the interactions within the land.
Right. Right. Jim Hill was talking last week, I think, about how this is sort of new territory for Disney in terms of what they are or how you would train cast members in the land, because there is this element of it where you're going to be encouraged to, oh, definitely come and ride the rides, but you know what? You really need to come back at night and see the bioluminescence. So there is this concern right now in Disney that you either are going to, or I guess the two worst case scenarios could be people don't come back and experience it the way it's supposed to be experienced. Like, everybody rushes right there to get first in line for the rides or get there with very little lines to worry about. Or at night, Pandora is so crowded that nobody has a good experience.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, from what it sounds like, there's going to be a lot of interactive experiences in or during the night. Like, there's going to be plant drum, like, quote-unquote drums that you can play, and, like, throughout the day there's going to be, like, professional people playing those plant drums. But I don't know, like, reading this article I was like, man, like, this actually does sound pretty cool. Maybe I shouldn't just stick my nose in the air to it.
No, that's the thing too, is I think if we did not put the name Avatar on this, I think people would be really excited to see what the Imagineers have come up with, right? If this were just a world called Pandora that we had no previous knowledge about or connection to, this would be getting much more hype. But I think you got a couple of things working against it. Number one, now, what, 8 years removed from Avatar, nobody, like, it doesn't have the staying power you would think a movie that made $1 billion at the box office would. And B, you know, we just found out that the sequels are going to be delayed almost indefinitely at this point. Like, when this deal was made, the idea was that Avatar 2 would have been released at Christmas, this past Christmas. So there wasn't anything really to build hype going into this. Excuse me. I think one of the things, too, that is excited about this from a Disney parks or just theme park in general fan perspective is this is the next evolution of where theme parks are going to have to go in order to keep up with everything your phone can do. And I know that sounds silly, but if you think about the craze that was Pokemon Go last summer, where you could lay a game over the world you walked and lived in all day, every day. Theme parks were going to have to do something to add that element to being in the park, right? I mean, it wasn't going to be enough anymore to just say, oh, get in line for this ride. And so we saw the first evolution of this was the very immersive Wizarding World. I think this is the next step with how much interaction there is. And then, you know, Nintendo World and the Star Wars experience are going to be things that we just cannot even fathom yet because we are not thinking about what is going to be necessary to comprehend that world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I understand exactly what you're saying.
All right, good, because I kind of lost track of what I was saying there first. All right, what is our next story?
Okay, so the rest of these news stories are going to be, I have four rumors.
Okay.
Well, one is kind of a rumor that was squashed.
Yeah, let's start with that one, because I do think it is news that the Jungle Book or the Jungle Cruise rumor was squashed.
Yes. So The Rock had posted a picture that he had lunch with Imagineers and that he was going to help them changed the Jungle Cruise ride. Well, Disney came out and said, yes, The Rock or Dwayne Johnson had had lunch with Imagineers, and they had like brainstorming talks about how they could change the ride, but there are no plans to change the Jungle Cruise at all.
And that makes sense. I mean, that makes absolute sense to me that, of course, they talked about what could be done if the Jungle Cruise is their next Pirates of the Caribbean. But there was no way that they were going to invest that kind of money to revamp a classic attraction before the movie had even opened.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing. Like, I think you have to see, one, if the movie's going to come out anyway, because even though he's been tapped to star in the movie, there's no production on the movie yet.
Right.
And two, if that movie is going to be successful. I think the reason Pirates was so successful when it came out was because it was completely different from the ride. I mean, you had, like, those little hints of, yes, that is based on, like, that character is based off the ride character, but it was so different.
Well, and also they, you know, with the with Pirates of the Caribbean, and I don't know that it would work as well for the Jungle Cruise, but they just went way off the board. I know that the Disneyland version of Pirates does have the story about the cursed gold and all that kind of stuff, but it was not, you know, the only other ride movie we had to that point before Curse of the Black Pearl opened was The Country Bears, and it was such a, yeah, I mean, it was such a dumb kids movie that the fact that there was a Pirates of the Caribbean movie opening at all, even Disney was concerned that no one was going to give it a chance, and that was going to be the way it was seen from the get-go. I don't know how you do a Jungle Cruise movie starring The Rock that is, that you convince people, oh, this is not a silly kids movie.
That's true, because like almost every single Disney movie that The Rock has done has been a kids movie.
Right. Tooth Fairy, Game Plan. I mean, yeah. And also just the Jungle Cruise doesn't have, I mean, I guess it does sort of have a dark element to it with all the jokes about all the people that have perished in the jungle, but right, there's no deeper story the way there was with Pirates.
Like, the Jungle Cruise is meant to be funny, and those jokes about the people dying are jokes. So, I don't know. I'm not too worried about anything changing. I don't think anybody else should be freaking out. Just calm your roll.
Yeah, it's not even realistic. What people are getting worried about, it's not even realistic at this point.
Yeah.
All right, what else do we have rumor-wise?
So I'm going to save the two, like, most exciting rumors for last.
Okay.
This next one is, so we heard about that the Uber-like system is coming to Disney World. Well, now these driverless shuttles might be coming to Disney World. So basically, I don't know if this is like part of the Uber-like system that they're doing, but Disney has been meeting with two different companies, one that's based in the United States and one that's based in France, about getting a contract for getting these shuttles. And there's like zero details on if these would take you from the resort to the park or from like your parking spot to the front of the park, or like what these are exactly used for. But there is apparently really close talk about, are they really close to like making a contract with one of these companies?
Well, it's not something, you know, I know initially people think driverless car, and that is definitely, it definitely plays into the Disney magic, but this is not something that hasn't been done before, right? Like Google Maps has been driving, having driverless cars in big cities for a while now. So, and the only reason I bring that up is not to say, oh, Disney didn't get there first. It's to say this doesn't have to just be limited to the parks, right? Like, initially I thought, well, gosh, you're going to have beacons in the parks to tell these things where to go. Obviously, that's not the case if Google has been doing their Google Drive program for so long.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I didn't really think about the Google Drive program, but you're right. I think this isn't something that's, like, completely shocking, I guess.
I mean, it's still cool, and don't get me wrong. Like, this is going to be a very fun way to travel around property. I'm wondering how far this can extend, and I also wonder if is this the first step towards the end of Magical Express?
Oh, I love Magical Express, though.
I mean, maybe you know, you run the numbers and maybe it doesn't make sense to end Magical Express. Maybe it's more cost efficient to keep it. But this would be less drivers they have to pay. This would be another contract with a contract with another company they could get rid of.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. Well, these shuttles are kind of small, so I don't know if they would completely get rid of Magical Express. But I can see your thinking and see why. This could be helpful for that.
Yeah. All right, what else do we have rumor-wise?
Okay, so everyone has heard these two rumors, but this is just something that we're super excited about. So the first is that Magic Kingdom might be getting a new mountain coaster. So we have Splash Mountain, we have Space Mountain, we have Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. Now we might get Fire Mountain, and it's going to be Moana themed.
Mm, so this obviously would go in Adventureland.
Yes. There's not exactly like a space that they like talk about, but they're saying that there could be a massive Adventureland expansion. You know, Enchanted Tiki Room is rumored to go away. There's Moana coming in. And Fire Mountain was an idea, like, back in the, I think it was back in the 70s, right? 70s or 80s?
I know they actually, they brought it up at the beginning of, like, 2003, maybe, before Atlantis came out. There was, and just absolutely bombed. Yeah. There was thoughts that if this was a hit, this would be a way to revive the Fire Mountain idea.
Yeah, and so, I mean, Fire Mountain has come at, or, like, Fire Mountain rumors have come out years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
But I think with the success of Moana, I mean, Moana did not do as well as Frozen, but I still think Moana was very popular.
Do you know that Moana actually did not do as well as Zootopia?
Really?
Yeah, that surprises me, only because I would think that there are a lot of opportunities in Animal Kingdom to get Zootopia, and I only bring that up because I'm surprised they've not already acted on Zootopia. Not
I know.
Saying they shouldn't do something with Moana. They absolutely should.
I'm surprised that they haven't changed, like, the Up thing to, or the Wilderness Explorers thing to Zootopia Police Department.
You know what I would do? I would change Rafiki's Planet Watch to a complete Zootopia theme kind of thing. I mean, like, even if all you did was change the train to the train that Judy rides in the beginning of Zootopia, that is a very exciting, it's suddenly something that most people skip would be a must experience one time kind of thing.
Yeah, I've still never done Rafiki's Planet Watch.
Yeah, there's no reason to if you don't have a kid.
Yeah, well, and I heard a couple episodes ago on Two Men and the Mouse, Kevin and Pete talking about it. I was like, maybe we should try it in August, but who knows if we actually will.
It is, if you are an animal lover and know what the schedule is when they're going to be doing medical procedures on the animals, I would imagine that might be interesting. But without a kid, I mean, I don't know that I would go over there anymore.
Okay, well, maybe I'll just wait until we have kids.
So have you heard what the idea is behind this roller coaster?
No, not really.
The idea behind this roller coaster is cool, and it's not something that hasn't been done other places. It's just there's nothing like this on Disney property. The idea behind this roller coaster is it is a regular roller coaster. You are very much, I don't know if you're supposed to be on the water or what, but you're very much on the ground until Tekka attacks, and then it turns into a flying roller coaster. So somewhere along the way, it goes from connected at the bottom to connected at the top.
Oh my gosh, that would be so fun.
Yeah, so what are the thing you talked about where this could go, there are two possibilities that I've heard. One, very similar to, they have this wasted piece of land over in Tomorrowland with Tomorrowland Speedway. They have a wasted piece of land in Adventureland with the treehouse.
Yes.
So that's one place it could go. The other is, this hasn't been done in Disney World before, but in Disneyland, when they put in the Temple of the Forbidden Eye, the Indiana Jones ride, they expanded out into the parking lot. And what you got is one of the world's longest themed queues. But once you got out to space where they could build, you have a pretty long or pretty big space that you can do the ride in.
Hmm.
So just food for thought there of where this could possibly be going. And I think probably expanding out into the parking lot or out towards, I guess, Bay Lake in this case, makes a lot more sense because you're going to have a lot of room to do multiple tracks.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. The other thing this does, too, is with all the new stuff that is opening in the, or I guess on the, if you're walking down Main Street, on the right side of the park, when the Tron Coaster comes online with, what's it called? Mine Train open right now. You do have to do something to draw people over to the left side of the park when the park opens. Otherwise, you have just unsustainable wait lengths on everything.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember, like, when Eric and I went to park opening and we went to Space Mountain, it was just the bottleneck effect. Like,
right.
The Space Mountain line was, like, all the way back towards that, towards, like, the Astro Orbiter, like, concession underneath there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was just because, like, you can only get in, like, one at a time because of that, how small the queue line is.
Right. The we need to get rolling here, but I just, along those lines, you know, our buddy Lynn Testa over at Touring Plans said it is pretty common now from the moment the park opens that Mine Train will have a 60-minute wait because people go and line up at that bridge, wait for the rope to come down, and immediately rush over to Mine Train. So they definitely need something to draw people over to the other side of the park.
Yes.
All right. What else do we have?
The last rumor is that there is a Haunted Mansion-themed restaurant in the works for Disney World.
I love this idea.
Yes. I was, like, really excited when Anne tagged me in this. Haunted Mansion is, like, one of the icons of Disney World, actually just Disney in general.
Right.
And so they just opened up that gift shop a couple years ago, and so adding a restaurant to it, I think it would be very, very popular.
Let's go ahead and say what, if you've not figured this out yet, what definitely will be coming if this restaurant does come online, RIP Columbia Harbor House, because that's obviously where this is going to go.
Yeah.
Which is too bad, because it's one of the best quick serves in the Magic Kingdom for my money, but
I agree.
But it is, if they do this, they instantly have, they've created what I think they were hoping they would create with the Skipper Cantina, which is a money-making attraction, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Because it's going to be something everybody wants to do, and hey, this isn't just you've already paid your admission for the day, this is pay to eat.
Yeah, like, it's going to be one of those things where if it's a quick service, it's going to get a lot of money. If it's a table service, it's going to be the new Be Our Guest.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think you've got to do table service. I mean, there's no way to get the full experience if you don't do table service.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Very good. Is that all we have for news and rumors this week?
That is.
All right. Stick around. Josh Taylor from Network 1901 is going to be our guest today. I'll talk a little bit about when you make that decision to make your love of Disney your career path. So that's our guest. Kat and I will be back at the end of the show with a little more news, rumor, and speculation. Thanks for listening to the Extra Magic Hour.
Hey everyone, it's Kat. We all know planning a Walt Disney World vacation takes a lot of time and effort. You gotta choose a resort, book dining, and choose fast passes. Well, I wanna take the stress out of your vacation. Book your vacation with me through Magical Travel and your trip planning will become as easy as pie. I'll take care of all the fine details for you at no additional cost. What's great about it is that you won't have to wake up early to get those hard to book reservations like Be Our Guest or Cinderella's Royal Table. I'll do my best to make your vacation the most fun and relaxing it can be. Even better, when you book a trip with me, I'll throw in a Disney gift card for you. Email me for a free quote at katarina@magicaltravel.com. That's katarina at magicaltravel.com. P.S. I also do all other Disney affiliates, so if you want to venture outside of the world, I will be able to help you there too. So what are you waiting for? Let's make your next trip magical.
So it is a pleasure to welcome back Josh Taylor from Network 1901. He and his wife also run the Modern Mouse Boutique. It's been a long time, and I, you know, we're going to talk about excuse me, the store and how you guys decided to sort of follow your passion for Disney into your professional lives and your careers. But the last time we had you on, Josh, we were talking about, at that time, the series you had just started, The World That Never Was. And I did want to let listeners know that you are working on a second season of that show, right?
Yeah, yeah. It should be out in just a few weeks. So I'm in the midst of actually putting everything together. I've got most of my interviews done and ready to go on that.
That's awesome. Now, one of the reasons that I like the show was great, and that is how we first got to know each other, was through the Disney Podcasters Facebook group. But that show is great. But the other thing that I really liked about you is you put a voice to something that I don't think a lot of us that do these kind of shows ever really admit to ourselves. And that is, you know, I said when you first started doing this show, I said, I know you're not trying to do the same thing, but have you heard the stories along these lines of unbuilt Disney attractions that Jim Hill is telling on his podcast? And you said, and it's like I said, one of the things that I think some of us don't admit to ourselves, it's okay if I'm not Jim Hill.
Right, absolutely. Like, I mean, there's so many other people that are out there doing something similar to somebody else, right? And
right.
And so it's okay that, like, I'm doing my own thing and I'm taking my own spin on it. Some people, I think, try and be carbon copies of other people, and I've just never been a fan of that. I do pay attention to, like, what other people are doing, but I try not to replicate. I try to emulate, not replicate.
Right. It is possible to live in this world where we are going to overlap with each other without doing the South Park Simpsons did it, shouted at the top of our lungs over everything.
Right, exactly.
So we wanted to have you on this week because I wanted to talk to you, and I know there are a lot of people out there that have done something similar, but you and your wife a few years ago opened the Modern Mouse Boutique, where you guys sell custom mouse ears, among other things. And so I just wanted to talk to you about sort of following that passion for Disney, or allowing that passion for Disney to become a part of your professional life. So just before we jump in with the more direct questions, could you kind of take me through the story of how the store got started?
Yeah, the store got started as kind of a natural progression for what we were doing. We started Modern Mouse Radio, or I started Modern Mouse Radio, just under 5 years ago now. And we were working really hard as people making a hobby out of podcasting.
Right.
And my wife was working a part-time job. I was working a full-time job. We were living in a place just outside of Denver, Colorado. Our roommate had left, so we needed a little extra money. We decided to stay on our lease, and instead of having a roommate, we just stayed. And the idea came about as when we went to Disneyland. You know, Angie never really liked wearing the Disneyland headbands. Mm-hmm. They hurt. They squeeze a little bit too much on the head. And so she would wear them, you know, for like an hour or so, and then not wear them again. And then she saw that there were clip-on ones, and she bought those and tried those on. And she said, oh, there's got to be like other varieties of things that are out there. And without knowing that anybody else was like custom making stuff, we decided to jump online and try and look up what we could do. And we found some other people that were making these, and it's like, okay, there's a possibility, there's a market for this. And we were huge fans of the Disney-bound idea.
Sure.
That's now become hugely popular. But this was quite a few years ago before it took off. But we were friends with Leslie, who started Disney-bound, the Disney-bound Tumblr, which started everything off. So we had this kind of conversation of if we wanted to do it, we would take a risk, and Angie would quit her job and start doing this. And if she could make a little bit more than what she was making at her part-time job, which was a pretty much minimum wage for anything, you know, I was pretty much the breadwinner at that point for our home. But if she could make enough money to pretty much make up for what she was losing out on, we'd give it 3 months. We had enough backup money to be able to do it, and we would just run with it. And without any kind of startup capital, without any idea of what could work or what couldn't work, we just started. And we had 3 months to try and make it work. we made it work. And within, let's see, we started officially really, like, we started gung-ho. See, it's 27 seats. So, like, December 2015, November, pretty much November, December 2015.
Okay.
And we were, from that point, yeah, just, like, within 3 months, it was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it was the ideal time to start, right? Because you're probably getting Christmas orders at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So there are a lot of questions about the day-to-day operation I have. But first, I do kind of want to ask you a little bit about getting started. You said you had some backup money saved. Your circle, your social circle, whether it is friends or your family or Angie's family, are they also bitten with the Disney bug the way you are? Or did you have to explain to them, no, there is this community of people like us out there. This is not as crazy as you might think it is.
Yeah, I mean, everybody thought we were crazy. We still have friends that think we're the craziest people they've ever met. You know, they don't get it. There's a lot of people that don't get it. But my parents and her parents are really cool. And the idea of, you know, like, if you think that you can make it, go ahead and do it. And we've always had this notion that, you know, failure doesn't mean that you are wrong. If you fail, if the business fails, you just take, you know, what you learned out of it, and you grow and you go to the next thing in life. And my parents especially have that same kind of thing. My father started his own business about maybe 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. So he knew, you know, like, this is a huge risk, but it could really pay off. It paid off for him. He made double the salary he'd been making for, you know, 20, 30 years of working. And so they were appreciative of that. Her parents were gung-ho about it. They kind of knew that there was a little bit of a community and we were doing some good things. And so it was a mixed bag. There were some people who were on board and some people who weren't. But we had, luckily, you know, the podcast to be right. Our first springboard into it as far as advertising and say, hey, we're starting this new venture. You're our audience. If you're interested in this, jump aboard. And we had a lot of people who were friends within the community that helped us out right away, too.
Is the podcast still the only or at least main way you advertise the boutique?
No. The boutique is actually really outgrown the podcast.
Yeah.
The boutique store was supposed to be an offshoot of the podcast, and now it's really become its own thing. And we actually, anytime we send out a package to somebody who's purchased a pair of ears or a necklace or anything like that, we always send a business card that has the Modern Mouse Radio and Network 1901 stuff with it, because most of our audience for the boutique doesn't know that we do this whole separate thing.
Right.
There is some crossover, and it's mostly the people who listen to the radio show that buy the boutique stuff, but it definitely has gone out and overboard. It's mostly people searching for us, searching for Instagram pictures and things like that. So yep. They don't even come close to touching Modern Mouse Radio.
So tell me a little bit about the legal challenges of starting a business like this, because, you know, don't mess with the mouse. I have heard, I don't know for sure, but I've heard that don't mess with the mouse is emblazoned on the walls in Bristol, Connecticut at ESPN's corporate office. It is certainly something that the Disney lawyers live by. When you're doing a business like this, there is so much dancing around copyrighted and trademarked material that you have to do, but you still want to be able to convey, look, this was inspired by the piece of art, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's when we first looked at it, we saw Leslie and she was doing the Disney bound thing. Mm-hmm. And the first legal loophole that we really saw was, you know, you can't go to the park and dress like Belle. You
right.
can't do it because kids will run up to you and they don't have control over that. But what you can do is, you know, wear this white and blue outfit that looks like Belle, that like would give off the idea that it's Belle, but it's not Belle. And having conversations with Leslie back and forth on that, having conversations with other people, people that we knew that worked for Disney, people that we knew had been selling stuff, t-shirts and things like that. we had those conversations with people, and there are some things that you should and should not do. And we see it all the time, whether it's at the park or whether it's online and somebody, you know, tells us or we just happen to see it. But when we buy all of our fabrics, we usually buy it either in store, at a local craft shop, or online. And there's several kinds of fabrics that you can buy, including some that have copywritten material already drawn onto them. Mm-hmm. I consider them like bedsheet material, you know, right. like kids' beds. A lot of people make those ears. They take kids' bedsheet type material and make those ears. Those you cannot do. They have Mickey Mouse on them. You cannot sell that. You can give them away, sure, but you cannot sell that kind of stuff. We tend to go the Disney-bound route, where instead of having Mickey Mouse on the actual piece, you use red, black, and yellow, and different variations.
Yeah, like a great example of what you guys do along those lines, or at least the one that stands out to me looking at the shop, is the Ariel-inspired ears that you guys do.
Yeah, we used a purple seashell. We found like a mermaid scale fabric, which has become extremely popular, that mermaid scale fabric, and we used a red bow and tied it all together. There's no thing that says Ariel. There's no picture of Ariel. There's nothing that goes on it except for things that allude to the character.
Right, like a tiny little fork, right, where the bow ties.
Right, exactly. And so those types of things we can get away with. Like, you can go to any party store across America and buy mouse ears. They usually have mouse ears or cat ears. So that actual like thing of putting a headband on with two circles on is not a Disney thing. There are companies out there that make those. But what we try and not do is take pictures of characters or pictures of attractions and use those on the ears. And the same thing with advertising or anything like that. If we go to the theme park, we make sure that if we take a picture of the ears or whatever, that it's not used with text on the actual picture so that it's not an advertisement.
Right.
So you don't step onto their private property and use their private property to try and sell something that isn't theirs.
Yeah. Is there a character or attraction that has been harder to kind of get the work around, correct, the Disney-bound look correct without encroaching on trademarked property? Or if you've done it enough times, do you sort of know the path you need to go down, even though the end result obviously is going to be different for each character or attraction?
Yeah, there's different paths into how to get to where you need to go, and it's a lot of trial and error. We just actually had a pair that we did for somebody that wasn't even a character. We were actually making, they wanted like cakes or macaroons or something like that as the ears. And we thought, okay, we can do macaroons. Those are round little pastries. We'll just make two of those and put them on these ears. And we probably had to make those five or six times before it actually looked like a real macaroon on somebody's head. So stuff like that actually is almost harder than doing the character, because you can look at a character and say, okay, what are the colors we associate with this character? What are some of the symbols we might associate with this character and move forward with it? There's different ways we approach it all the time. Usually Angie tries to draw something out, and if she likes it, we'll approach a customer with it. If they're asking for it, or we approach some friends to see what they think about it. We ask people sometimes, you know, guess what character this is. Mm-hmm. And if they can guess it, then great, we nailed it. If they can't guess it, we think, you know, okay, maybe back to the drawing board. We'll try it again. We'll draw it off again. And then, we go from the drawing to try and making it and hunting for fabrics that work for that. And then, you know, once it's a made piece, we take the pictures and put it up and, hopefully it sells.
So for people that are not familiar with Network 1901 and the not even shows, let's call it the entertainment product you do with Network 1901. I mean, there is a lot of discussion of the Disney company on the podcast. There is the videos you do on YouTube. You have the Modern Mouse Boutique. You and your wife recently packed up and moved to Anaheim. I do have to wonder, are there ever times that you just have to take a breath and say, I don't think I can Disney today?
Yeah, actually, I just got over kind of a weird hump, it's not even that I can't Disney today. It's that there aren't enough hours in the day to Disney.
Right.
For me, I really do believe in a lot of the things that we're doing all the time, whether it's the network, whether it's the shop, and being able to go to Disneyland anytime I'd like to, being just a short trip away.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have to step away from Modern Mouse Radio for a few weeks just because there was so much else in my life going on. The Modern Mouse Boutique stuff in particular, I mean, probably takes up an 8 to 10 hour part of my day. And then we do 3 podcasts, 3 videos a week for the network. And I'm usually the one that does all the artwork. I do editing of all of my videos, all of my podcasts and everything like that. So it does become straining. So it's not even like thinking about Disney, because when I think about like Network 1901 or Modern Mouse Boutique, Modern Mouse Radio, it is Disney to an extent, but it's also my product. So my product is too much for me.
Right.
it's taking over. And so when I get to go to Disneyland and I don't have to bring my camera, that's still a vacation for me.
So it's not even like trips to Disneyland or a chance to even just wear the ears and get people to ask questions. If there are times you go and just completely shut off the, let's call it marketing side of your brain.
Yeah. There's definitely times where Angie and I just head over to Disneyland. And being an annual pass holder, it's so nice because you're able to say, okay, hey, it's 6 p.m. The park closes at 10 p.m. Why don't we just go over for like 4 hours, which is something I never would have been able to do living anywhere else in the country, but being, a 15-minute jaunt away from the park. It's like, okay, yeah, let's do that. And getting those few hours in and not bringing anything, not marketing anything, just simply being people that exist. And luckily, I'm not some kind of pseudo celebrity where I get recognized. So I really am just kind of a patron in the crowd, and that is an escape still for me.
So doing this, it sounds like there's never really going to be time if you want to keep Network 1901 and Modern Mouse Boutique at the level that listeners, viewers, and customers have come to expect. There's never going to be time for a quote-unquote real job as well.
there's time. I always try and make time for everything. I did pick up, and if anybody is in the local Southern California area, at the end of May, I'll be working Tuesday nights at the Esports Arena in Santa Ana, hosting trivia. So, there's little moments and businesses and things I do pick up on, and I'm working doing trivia. I'm working for a company, so it's not my personal trivia business. So yeah, and actually, to be honest, that's another way. Even though I'm working for somebody else, I can turn my brain off. If anybody out there knows, when you run your own business, it is a 24-hour a day job. So when people say, oh yeah, I own my own business, so it's nice, I make my own hours, they're flat out lying to you. Their hours are 24 hours a day. It does not stop. So for me to go work for 2 or 3 hours for somebody at a bar and host trivia is a luxury to get away from the work that I do at home. Because working from home, I wake up in the morning, I walk into my living room, and there's the work staring at me in the face.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was getting at, too, when you talk about the 24 hours. I mean, there is a hustle you have to be comfortable with, a pace you certainly have to be comfortable with in order to make this work. And I wonder if there are times that you have to take a deep breath and remind yourself that it's all worth it.
Yeah, Angie and I both do. We have to kind of like stop ourselves, especially after like a long day of work, and it's like, why are we doing this? And it's like, stop and say like, okay, we could be working for somebody else, make a minimum wage, start all over again. We're our own bosses. We do our own work. Yeah, sometimes we have a customer that we don't want to deal with. We have listeners or people who are on YouTube that leave awful comments, and it's like, who are these people? Why do you hate us?
Right.
But at the same time, we have so many people who love us, that love what we do, that love the ears that we get, that love listening to the podcast, that love like the entire enterprise that is our businesses. And because of that, that's why we keep going, and that's why we keep going forward into new adventures and trying new things and adding more businesses on top of businesses, because it's like, okay, this worked, let's try something else, let's try something new, and let's add on to what we're doing, and let's bring in people for Network 1901, etc. And all of that really is inspiring, or inspired by the people that continue to be customers or listeners or whatever the case may be.
I forgot until you mentioned it that you guys will, you know, for the right price and upon occasion do custom ears with Modern Mouse Boutique. So that did make me wonder this time last year, any requests for Make America Great Again or Lock Her Up ears?
No, there weren't any. And it's funny because I would have so been on top of that. I would have been like, yes, absolutely, that would have been great. No, we do get some kind of crazy weird requests. We've gotten some amazing requests, and a lot of people who do custom pieces for us, or who ask for us to do a custom piece for them, those end up on the website. Those end up right in our store. And it's like another thing. And usually we tell people, as customers, we won't charge them anything. If we feel like it's something that'll end up in our store, we won't charge them any more than what a normal piece in our store would end up being. Cause we don't want to charge somebody $100 for something, and then they find out a month later they could have bought it for $32. So we always charge people who get a custom piece that we think is going to be a part of our store just a normal price. And we try and be in communication with everyone as much as possible. I try and get to emails as quickly as I can. And that's something that I also pride myself on. And they were very communicative and kind to people. And we try and do everything that people want us to do. Even to the point where we have to redo something 5 or 6 times before it looks like a macaroon.
Josh Taylor, Network 1901 and Modern Mouse Boutique, and the new season of The World That Never Was coming up real soon. Go ahead and subscribe, by the way, to Network 1901. Then you'll see all the new seasons of all the new shows whenever they hit. Josh, thanks so much, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hello, I'm Storybook Julius, the White Dragon Podcast Network's resident Canadian and the host of Storybook Radio, a Walt Disney World and Universal Studios podcast appearing every Wednesday here on WDPN. Walt Disney was a storyteller, and well, so am I. Now, I'm not saying that I'm as cool as Walt Disney or anything, but I'm saying that if you're looking for a unique take on the Walt Disney World and Universal Studios theme parks, with immersive looks at their stories, backstories, and histories, you've come to the right place. Head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Podomatic to subscribe to and download the Storybook Radio podcast each and every Wednesday. You can also check out www.storybookradio.com for more details and more content.
Hey folks, Kevin Kessler from the White Dragon Podcast Network here. One of the questions I get asked all the time is, Kevin, I want to have a podcast, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know anything about audio equipment. I don't know anything about editing. I don't know anything about how to post and promote a podcast. Well, folks, you are in luck, because what if I told you there is a way you can have your podcast with minimal effort from you and still be a part of the White Dragon Podcast Network, joining the family of 9 all-star podcasts that are already broadcasting 7 days a week here on WDPN. For a free consultation, please send an email to kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com, and I will tell you personally how we can take care of everything from the production to the editing to the posting to the server space to promotion of your podcast. I want to welcome you into the White Dragon Podcast Network family, so please drop me a line, kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com. I look forward to welcoming you into the White Dragon Podcast Network.
The Extra Magic Hour is just about over. Aww. But first, it's time for the glorious 3-hour finale.
All right, just about to wrap things up, but because we had so much rumor in our news this week, Kat, I thought it would be great to end the show with a little mix of news and rumor that is what we learned about Star Wars Experience coming out of Star Wars Celebration this year, because while we're getting news about the Star Wars Experience, what we're really getting news about is the future of Magic Band.
Yes.
So if you have not heard, Magic Band, I believe they're going to be calling it, when Star Wars Experience opens, it will be Magic Band 3.0. You could perfectly encapsulate how this is going to be used in the way that the Millennium Falcon ride will interact with you, in that, you know, I think everybody knows by now that when you ride this ride, it's going to be you flying the Millennium Falcon, and if you fly it very poorly and are crashing into things, there will be someone at the end of the ride to yell at you about how, you know, you busted up the Millennium Falcon, do you know how much this is going to cost to repair, blah, blah, blah. And then as you walk around the land, rumor will have spread and you will hear people say, that's the guy that busted up the Millennium Falcon. Or maybe in one of the restaurants, you'll run into somebody that had a cargo shipment on the Millennium Falcon that got damaged or had to be dropped in order to escape from the Empire. So all on your Magic Band, which I think now will be called Magic Enhancer or something like that by the time this comes out, it will be information about how you performed on this ride, and thus every time you ride this ride, every time you go into Star Wars Experience, you could have a different, you'll have a completely different day based on what you've done on the Millennium Falcon ride.
Oh my gosh, that seems awesome.
It seems incredibly awesome. I think Star Wars Celebration basically confirmed the Star Wars hotel we talked about. That, you know, that next level interactivity is going to be, more than any of the rides, that's going to be the signature attraction of this land. And it kind of has to be, right? Because the only thing that Universal can do with Nintendo Land is insane interactivity.
Yes.
So you get that, and then there is whatever they are calling this new battle ride, which is going to be the first time in a Disney park that you exit your vehicle during a ride and essentially have to fight your way out. To be done with the ride. That I'm sure everybody has seen the videos that are going around, the full scale AT-AT Walker attack that is going to happen on your vehicle, and that is that begins your battle sequence.
Oh, that would be cool.
So yeah, if you've not seen this, look them up, because there are videos of people have made the Imagineers have made the steel frames that will make up the walkers for these attractions, but Disney very much is looking at what is coming with Nintendo Land, and I think, and maybe you feel differently about this, but I think Disney is kind of realizing that they swung and missed with New Fantasyland as an answer to Harry Potter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love New Fantasyland, but it is not as immersive as Harry Potter, and I have still not been to Harry Potter.
Yeah,
I know that.
It is, I think they kind of realized that in order to get that immersiveness or immersion, which is, and you're going to see this with Pandora, right? It's got to be a single cohesive land. Part of the problem of New Fantasyland is we jump from whatever Ariel's kingdom is to France with Beauty and the Beast to, you know, Snow White in Germany, I think.
Yes.
You know, there's no consistency even to the architecture of that land.
Yeah.
So this will definitely be cool when it comes online, for sure.
Yeah, that will be really cool. And like, honestly, I don't think like we would ever do the Star Wars thing, the hotel.
Uh-huh.
But I would totally try to upsell that to clients, especially those who are like massive Star Wars fans.
Yeah, I've already told my wife, because by the time Star Wars Land opens 2019, Aaron will be 8, and Annie will be 10. And our daughter doesn't like Star Wars the way my son and I do, but she still likes them. You know, I mean, she's still,
yeah,
all the girls in the movie are movie characters she latches onto. It is something that I want to do one time. I mean, it seems like that only this 3-day package is offered. That we talked about last time, but it is the kind of thing that, I mean, this is where Disney magic is going in the future, right? Like, this is the opportunity to create memorable experiences that we haven't seen a million times before.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, that will do it for the show this week. Thanks to Josh Taylor, and thanks to you, Kat.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Good stuff as always.
Yes.